We're holding on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, 11 lines from the bottom. We started talking about the question, well, we had two different versions of what Rav Abahu said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. One of them was that the various Isurim Shabbat Torah, if a person eats them, of course, they get Malkus. But if you use them, but only Derech Hana'asan, only if you eat them in the normal way in which you have Hana'ah from them. For example, Rav Shimon Ba'ashi said, if you take Chalev, for example, if you eat raw Chalev, you'd be Potter. Because the normal way, if you're going to eat chaylev, is to cook it. So if you eat it raw, then it's shaloi kaderech hana'asai. The first one was elo derech achilasan, and that's an example. The second one was elo derech hana'asan, which is, for example, let's say with chaylev, again, if the normal thing to do with chaylev would be to burn it, or to smear it on skins, on leather or whatever, in order to soften them as the first process of tanning them to make them into leather. Rather than, for example, if you take chaylev and put it on a wound, then that's not the regular way of hana. So one way of understanding the difference between the two lashonis is Rashi seems to imply that the first lashon we're talking about things that are also to eat, and the second one we're talking specifically only about things that are also b'hana, for example, chametz for Pesach and shura niskol and orla and various things that we've talked about the last couple of days. So the first lashon would be generally about all the things that are also to eat, and the second one would be limiting the rule only to isurei hana. Another way of explaining it, various nosekelim on the Rambam, the Mishnah Lamelech, and Lachem Mishnah, have various other ways of understanding the Morgan, have various other ways of understanding the distinction between the two Lashonis. One of them I mentioned yesterday is that maybe the first Lashon would say you have to change two things in order to be Potter. So Chalev is not normally eaten at all. It's normally used for other purposes. So then you would have the person, number one, is eating it instead of using it for some other purpose, and he's eating it raw. So only then is he Potter. But if he only changed one thing, let's say he cooked it and ate it, then he'd be Chayev. Whereas the second lashon would be saying that you only need to change one thing and then you're already potter. So we mentioned that concept. Then we mentioned Rav Zeira tried to bring a proof for it, but Abaye said that attempted proof is not a valid proof. Now that doesn't mean necessarily Abaye is disagreeing with the din itself, because in fact now Abaye is going to go on to say that something that he himself is basing himself on what Rav Abahu said. But he's saying the proof that Rav Zeira tried to bring from the fact that if a person eats juice of berries or whatever of orla, the zanchayev is not necessarily a valid proof, because it's not so much that juice is shaloi kederech hana'asai as that juice is really not considered the fruit itself on a deraisa level, at least. It's just considered zeya b'alma, it's just considered like sweat from the fruit, and therefore you can't be chayev malchus for it. But with that said, it would be also anyway, for it might be also on the grounds of yotze min atomei. It might be in general you have a rule in halacha that when you have something tomei or something osur, then something else that comes out from it is also osur, even if otherwise it wouldn't have been. So this juice of these berries might well be osur, maybe even on a deraisa level, because it's yotze min atomei, just that we're saying that you don't necessarily get Malkus for it. Okay, so this is where we're holding then, 11 lines from the bottom of Chaf Dalet Amud Beis. Amar Abaye, Hakol Moedim V'Kilaya Kerem. Now, says Abaye, everybody will agree, meaning both Lashonis that we just said, will agree V'Kilaya Kerem, when it comes to Kilaya Kerem, grain or grapes, grain or vegetables that are planted in a vineyard, if a person eats them, and those are also b'hana, shaloikin alein, afila shaloika derech hana'asan. Those a person will get malchus for, even if he's using them not in the usual way of their hana. So let's say the example we had before about chaylev, putting it on a wound, so we said that a person will be potter for it because it's not derech hana'asan. But Abaye is telling us that if a person were to take Kalaya Kerem and do that, then he would be Chayiv Malkus for it. My timer, why is that? Mishum Delek Sibahu Achila. Because by Kalaya Kerem, it never actually says the word in the Torah, you shouldn't eat them. If it said some Lashon of Achila, whether it was Lo Ye'ochel, like we learned the other day Chizkiah says, or whether it's Lo Soichal, like Rav Abahu says, either way, we would say that then in order for it to be also bahana, we need another limud for it, and therefore we can say that ultimately we would say that whether even if hana from it is also, it would be also only if it's similar to achila, meaning that it was eaten or used in the normal way. But by kalaya kerem, the pasuk never uses the word achila at all. The expression in the pasuk is pen tikdash hamalaya, that if you plant these things in a vineyard, pen tikdash, it may become holy, meaning off limits, meaning also. And it also means you should burn it. The word tukad, the word tikdash is also related to the word tukad esh. It should be burnt in fire. So therefore, so that constitutes a lav. And therefore, since it never says achila, then there's no reason to make a distinction between whether it's derech hana'osan or not. Okay. So the Gemara asks Meisvi, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Isi ben Yehuda Omer, minayim lebos b'cholov shehu osur. How do we know that bos b'cholov is osur b'hana in the first place? So first we have to establish that it's also to eat in the first place. All the pasuk tells us each time is loisa vasho gdi b'chalevim. I don't cook an animal in its mother's milk. So maybe it's only also to cook. Maybe it should actually be also to eat. So nemar kan ki am kodesh ata, in connection with bas b'chalav in the various places where it mentions it, it says, you are a holy nation to Hashem. V'nema lahalan v'anshe kodesh tiyuni. By an animal which was trefa, that was injured by a wild animal, or that has any of the other 70 conditions that would make it trefa. The pasuk says v'anshe kodesh tiyuni. You should be holy men to me, holy people to me. So the same. So we make a gzeira shava malahalan osur afkan osur. There it's osur to eat trefa, and we know that clearly because the pasuk says. So therefore, afkan also the same way. By bas b'cholov also the pasuk, by using the word ki am kodesh ata, the pasuk is telling us that it's also to eat. The ainli ela ba'achila. Now, if you only had that gzeira shava, then you would only know bas b'cholov is also to eat. Ba'na minayin. How do we know that it's also ba'na? Amarta kavachomer. So you can make a kavachomer. Uma orla shall never be avera. Madach orla, no avera was done. You plant a tree, you haven't done any avera. It's just for the first 3 years, the fruit is off limits. And yet asura bahana, yet orla is also bahana. We have to go through the whole braisa, then we're going to see what the question is. But the point we're going to end up with is that in this whole discussion, we don't bring up kalaya kerem. Now, according to Abaya's rule, Kalaya Kerem should have been brought up in the discussion over here. Anyway, so Ma Urla Shle Nevda Ba'Aveira, Madach Urla, where no Aveira was done, Asura Ba'Na, and yet it's also Ba'Na during those first 3 years, Bas V'Cholav Shle Nevda Ba'Aveira, after all, Bas V'Cholav, you cooked them together. That itself is definitely a lab. It says clearly in the Torah, Lois of Ashel. Ein Adin, Shiyehe Asa Ba'Na, how much more so that it should be Asa Ba'Na. But the Bryce continues, Mala Ola Shekin Loy Hosala Shasa Kosher. How do you, well, you could slug up that Kavachomer. After all, Orla never had a time when it was Mutter, because this particular fruit that you're talking about, you're saying this fruit is also as Orla and is also Bahana as well. As soon as it started to come into existence, as soon as it blossomed, as soon as it started developing, it was already during the 3 years and it was also. Toma Babos Bacholov Shahoisala Shasa Kosher. How do you compare with basar v'cholov? Each of the components of it, the basar and the cholov, originally had a shasa kosher. At one point, the basar was mutter and the cholov was mutter. So the answer is chomus v'pesach yechiyach. The answer is, okay, you can instead, fine, you're right, you can't show from Orla, but instead show from chomus v'pesach. Shehoy lo shasa kosher, where at one point it was mutter, Before Pesach came, before the sixth hour came, va'asa b'hana, and therefore it's also, and yet it's also b'hana. So therefore, you could say the same thing about basar b'cholov. But then continues Isi ben Yehuda, mal chometz Pesach shekhen onush kores. Yeah, but how are you comparing? Chometz Pesach is more serious because a person is high of kores for eating it. Toma b'basa b'cholav she'ena onesh kares. How do you compare with basa b'cholav where there's no kares? Maybe you would say chametz pesach. Okay, since it's more stringent, it has kares. Then therefore, even though it had a shas kosher, nevertheless it's also b'hanah. Where do you see the same thing should apply to basa b'cholav, which is much less lenient? Now, Tosfos also points out that we can't say at this point in the discussion that maybe we should be able to prove to the contrary from Shura Niskol, because after all, again, Shura Niskol, as soon as it's shechted, it's already also b'ano. There's no time when it was mutter, there was no time when it was when it had a shasa kosher to eat, as opposed to chametz v'peistach and basa b'cholav had a shasa kosher to eat. So it's not a valid comparison. But then at that point, we say, Kilaya Kerem Yechichu. At that point is where we bring in Kilaya Kerem, and we say we can prove from that, She'ein Onosh Kores, because if a person eats Kilaya Kerem, he's not Chayav Kores either, it's only an Isur Lav, V'Osabahana, and yet we see that it's Osabahana. Rashi brings from a Gemara in Cholin that also has this discussion, where it's discussing Basa B'Cholav, and say in that case, then we should be able to go back to Orla then, and make a tzada shove. And then the Gemara explains over there that Orla and Kelaya Kerem and Chometz HaPesach all have this in common. They all grow from the ground. Basa B'cholav doesn't. Now, that's not a kula or a chumra, but when it comes to a kavachomer, you don't need a kula or a chumra to shlug it up. Any difference that you can find between the things is enough to shlug it up. So even the combination of orla and chametz pesach is not going to be good enough, and therefore we need to bring in kalaya kerem. So v'im isa. So now getting back to what Abaya said, that kalaya kerem is also b'hana, even an unusual kind of hana because it doesn't say achila by it. Nifrich. So why can't we shlug up the kavachomer as follows? You're trying to bring a kavachomer using kalaya kerem, where you're saying it's not onosh koris, it's only an isulav, and it's also b'hana, and it's like basa b'cholav in that an avera was done with it. But nifrich, we could slug that up. Mal kalaya kerem shekein loikin alein afil shalikader hanasan. You know what though? Kalaya kerem has a chumra in that you get malchus for it according to what Abaya is saying. Even if you use it shalikader hanasan. Whereas we don't yet know that at this point in the discussion about basa b'cholav. So therefore, doesn't that show the fact that Isi ben Yehuda is able to use a kavachomer with kilaya kerem as part of it, and we don't slug it up by saying that kilaya kerem has that chumra? Doesn't that show it doesn't have that chumra? So what does Abaya answer to that? He says, Toma b'mai. What do you want to say? What do you want to say that you can slug up the kavachomer and say that you can't learn basa b'cholav from it? Toma b'basa b'cholav shein loikin olav elo derech hanah. So you're going to say you can slug it up because basa b'cholav, in fact, you don't get malchus for it unless you use it derech hanah. So what do you mean? Ota b'basa b'cholav achila k'sivve? No. And by basa b'cholav does it say the word achila either? It also says loy sevashal b'di b'chalevim. It never uses the word achila. So yes, actually, Abaya would say the same rule that applies to kalaya kerem, that you get malchus for using it even shaloi keder hanah. So the same thing actually would apply to basa b'cholav. So therefore, so there's nothing to shlug up the kavachomer with. So v'idach, okay. So the other opinion. So we had Abaya, and then we had Stama de Gemara arguing on Abaya. So de kamoisivla, whoever asked the question, what taka were they thinking? Didn't they know that basa b'cholav is also b'hana, and it's also shaloik, and it's also shaloik, not that it's also b'hana, that we learn from Isi ben Yehuda, but that it's also, that a person would be chai of malchus for it, even shaloik aderech hanasa? Doesn't he agree with that also? He says no. Savar, he would say, lahochi kugama menevela. As a matter of fact, you would say, that this is why. Now we started. Isi ben Yehuda said, "How b'chalal are we learning that basa b'cholav is also ba'achila? Is we're learning from nevela, or not really nevela per se? We're learning from trefa, but we said a basa b'cholav trefa. So okay. So the Gemara is using the word nevela a little bit loosely. Rashi brings another explanation that another possible explanation that that but we do actually mean nevela over here. What we mean is, if you have, let's say, a limb that was partially torn off the animal and it's still a little bit attached, and then you shech the animal, the din is that limb itself remains also to eat. So that's similar to nevela. Rashi doesn't like that explanation, though. So basically, then when the Gemara is using the word nevela over here, it's using a little loosely. Really, it means trefa. Anyway, so he would say, so the Machshon thought as follows, Lahochi Kogamim Nevela, after all, why do we have to learn from Nevela out of all the Isurim Shabbat Torah? Why did the Eibishter choose to put the other part of the Gzeira Shabbat by Nevela or by Trefa, where there we're going to learn from that from Blasa V'Cholav? Because Lahochi Kogamim Nevela. That is why we're supposed to be learning from Nevela. Ma Nevela Derech Hana'osa. Just like by nevela, you're only chayev if you eat it derech hana'asa. Again, according to the two lashonis before, we would say that even that if you eat that if you use it that even if you eat it shaloika derech hana'asa, for example you eat it raw. Then you're not chayiv, and according to the second lashon, also if you use it, for example, if you use it for some purpose, well, nevela is muta b'hana anyway. But the point is that so even according to the first lashon, if you eat nevela in an unusual way, then you wouldn't be the not derech hana'asa, then you'd be potter. So therefore, af basa b'chalav derech hana'asa. So he says that's the point that we're learning from nevela or from trefa to basa b'chalav. That basa b'chalav also fine. Unlike trefa, it is unlike nevela or trefa. It is also bahana, but still, at least we shouldn't be machmir to the extent of saying that if it's shaloi kaderech hana'asa, you should get malchus. So therefore, so the Machshon figured in that case, then, so basa b'chalav in fact is also bahana, but only if it's derech hana'asa. Well, there you go. Then, in that case, then it's a valid question to ask: how can you, Abaya, be saying that kalaya kerem you do get malchus shaloi kaderech hana'asa? If in that case you could use that to shlug up Isi Ben Yehuda's Kavachomer. And the fact that you don't seems to show that in fact Kalaya Kerem also is like Basa B'Cholov in that only Derech Hana'asai. Ve'Abaya, Abaya, so what does Abaya answer to that? He says, it's true we are learning from Trefa to Basa B'Cholov, but Lahochi Lekosav Achila B'Gufay. But the fact of the matter is, that must be why, in fact, it's true we're learning from Trefa, but the fact is that must be why the Pasuk didn't put the word Achila in connection with Basa B'Cholav. In any one of the places where it talked about it, it could have said Loy Soichal or Loy Ye'ochal or whatever. And that is Loyma Shaloika Nala Afila Shaloika Derechana Osai, to tell us that a person gets Malkus for it even if Shaloika Derechana Osai. So therefore, so you Machshon are thinking we're learning it from Trefa, and therefore all the rules apply, including that it would only be Kederech Hana'asai, like with Trefa. No, with Basa B'Cholav, it's a different rule, and it is, in fact, like Kalaya Kerem, and therefore it is valid to learn from Kalaya Kerem to Basa B'Cholav and use Kalaya Kerem as part of the Kal V'Chomer to show that Basa B'Cholav is also Bahana. Okay. So the Gemara asks, the Lifreich, okay, so fine, so we took care of that then. So we haven't schlugged up Abaya, but we still have the question: how are we using Kalaya Kerem to uphold the Kavachomer, the Liferich? Why can't we schlug it up and say Mal Kalaya Kerem Shekein Lo Hoyse Lo Shasa Kosher? After all, Kalaya Kerem, presumably we're talking about. So what happened? You planted grapes or you planted grain next to the vines and they started growing. And the pastures, we're assuming the original, let's say you planted a vegetable over there. We would assume, for purposes of the question, the original vegetable you planted didn't become osur. Whatever grows afterwards from that plant becomes osur. So in that case, then whatever grows afterwards and becomes osur doesn't have a shasa kosher. It would be the same thing as orla, where we said as soon as the fruit starts developing, it's already orla. The same thing over here: as soon as the vegetable starts developing, it's already orla. So then it had no shasa kosher. Amar of Adaba Ava. So the answer is, Rav Adaba Ava says no. Zoy semeres kilaya kerem ikra ne'esorin. As a matter of fact, since we don't slug it up that way, that shows that actually by kilaya kerem, even the ikur, even the original vegetable, the original plant that you planted over there already becomes usur. Now that plant, let's say you took let's say a turnip or you took some other kind of vegetable or something and planted it next to the grapevines, it had a shasa kosher. It's like basa b'chalav. It was perfectly mutter until you planted it over there. Then once it starts growing, not only does any new growth becomes usur, but the original growth becomes usur as well. So even though it had a shasa kosher, we still see it's also b'hana, so therefore we can use that as part of the kavah chomer with basa b'chalav to say it's also the whole thing is also b'hana. Rashi then brings another explanation that now we're gonna learn soon in the Gemara. The next thing is that actually it does need to grow a certain amount in order to be usur. It needs to grow at least 1/200th of its growth in order to become usur. The Yerushalmi, by the way, explains how we figure that out. What we do is we take this type of vegetable or grain or what have you and see how long it takes to completely dry out. We assume the amount of time it takes to dry out is equivalent to the amount of time it took to grow. Now, obviously, you have, for example, some vegetables take months to grow. They don't take months to dry out, but it's not like during the whole time when they're in the ground, they're constantly growing. They have growth cycles. Sometimes they grow during the day. They grow during the daytime, but not at night, or sometimes the other way around, or whatever. So the Yerushalmi gives an example. If you take a certain vegetable and it takes 100 hours for it to dry completely out, then it means that the amount of time that it spends growing while it's attached to the ground is 100 hours. Therefore, half an hour would be the equivalent. Therefore, if it spends half an hour there, then it's the equivalent of 1/200th growing. Anyway, Rashi brings an explanation. So again, and what we're saying over here is that the new growth becomes usur. When you have 1/200th. Rashi brings another explanation that the Makshin thought that maybe the moment you plant the vegetable there next to the grapevines, it already becomes usur, and the answer is that not. But Rashi has a long explanation of why that doesn't work out. After all, with Basa B'Cholav also, Basa B'Cholav also, for example, if you soak Basa and Cholav, it doesn't become ulcer, only when you cook them together. Kilayim, as long as they don't actually get, until they actually take root in the ground, they're not considered Kilayah Kerem. So you can't say the moment you planted them, they would become ulcer. That would be the equivalent of saying the moment you put Basa and Cholav together, they become ulcer. And they don't, only when you cook them. And the same thing with Kalaikadam, only when they get rooted in the ground. And it actually goes on with a couple of other questions on that as well. So Rashi's left with the first explanation that what we're saying is that the planting itself, until the, whatever vegetable you planted over there, not only the original vegetable itself was mutter, it remains mutter until it actually takes root in the ground and starts growing. And then at that point, once it reaches 1/200th of its growth, all of it becomes also, including the original vegetable. So therefore, in that case, it didn't really have, so that in that case, you can't really say, well, so that's the thing. Hoy over hoysland, shasa kosher, koda mashrosha. So as a matter of fact, Kalai Kedem does have a shasa kosher before it takes root in the ground. So therefore, it's similar to Basa B'Cholav, which also had a shasa kosher before you cooked it together. We thought that it didn't have a shasa kosher, again, according to Rashi's preferred explanation, because only what grows after it was planted becomes also. We assume the original vegetable remains mutter. No, it doesn't rot necessarily. No, because it depends. It depends what kind of vegetable you're talking about. If you plant a turnip, for example, the original turnip doesn't rot on the ground. Right? Eventually it does. But usually what happens is a root vegetable like that, it just becomes larger in the ground. You have all over Shas, you have that distinction between Dover Shezare Kola and Dover Shein Zare Kola. You have certain things, like wheat, for example, where you plant them and the original seed rots away and then a plant grows from it. And then you have ones like various kinds of root vegetables where the original root remains, onions is another example, and then it grows larger in the ground. So here we're talking about that second kind. So again, the Gemara's initial assumption was that if, let's say, I take a turnip and plant it near grapes, then the original turnip would remain mutter, and if I could identify it, I'd be able to eat that part. Only the new growth would be usser. And now the Gemara is saying that no, the whole thing actually becomes usser. So as soon as it takes root in the ground and starts growing, then already the whole thing becomes usser, but up until that point, it had a shasa kosher until it took root. Again, Rashi's second explanation is that the Gemara thought as soon as you planted it becomes usser, and the answer is that not. But Rashi doesn't like that explanation because of these various questions, and okay, so therefore, so that's the answer, therefore. Kelaya Kerem did in fact have a shasa kosher because the original vegetable was mutter before you planted it, and it actually remained mutter until it took root in the ground and started growing. So Hoyu v'Hoshala and shasa kosher, Kodim HaShosha, because they had a shasa kosher before they took root in the ground. Okay, must have Rav Shemaya, but Rav Shemaya asks on that. So you're telling me the moment that it takes root in the ground, that becomes usur. But we learn in a Mishnah in Kilayim, Hamaver otzitz nokuf bekerem. If a person takes a flower pot with a hole in it and walks with it through through a vineyard. So now, since the flower pot has a hole, then therefore it's able to get nourishment from the ground through the hole. We've also talked about in the Sefer Shabbos and some other places about various materials that it might be made out of where it's considered that it has a hole even though it actually doesn't. Earthenware is one of them. I think you have some of the Shonim who say maybe also wood. Anyway, whatever the case, it definitely, if it has a hole in it, then it takes nourishment from the ground. So you're walking through a vineyard with it, and that flower pot contains grain or vegetables that have already started growing. Im hoisef masayim osir, only if it grows 1/200th more, then it becomes osir. Implying hoisif ein loy hoisif loy. So if it didn't yet grow that 200, it doesn't yet become osir. So you see, even though it's already rooted in the ground, so it doesn't become osir until 1/200th. So what are you telling me, therefore? So what are you telling me a minute ago that if we take, let's say, a turnip or an onion and plant it together with grapes, that it's going to become immediately osir as soon as it takes root? What do you mean? It has to also grow by 1/200th. The reason for the 200th that Rashi mentions, by the way, is Bichlal, we have most Isurim Shabbat Torah, we know are Batal B'Shishim. Certain Isurim, you need a larger amount, and in particular, Truma, you need 100 times as much in order to be Mevatal, we've learned that before. This Rashi brings from the Sifri that since Kilayim is, so to speak, twice as osir as Truma, because not only you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to have enough from it, therefore the amount to be Mevatal is also 200. It is also twice as much, 200. So if it grew less than 1/200th, then that extra growth is Batal. On the other hand, if it grew 1/200th, meaning before you had 199 and now you have 200, then therefore it becomes also because now you don't have 200 times as much to be mevatel. So you carry in the flower pot. So Pasha said, as you're carrying it through, remember again, it's got a hole in it, and therefore it's taking nourishment from the ground. So therefore, you would have to be careful. So again, in our example over there, in our example before from the Yerushalmi of a plant that takes a hundred hours to dry out, you would have to make sure you don't spend more than half an hour in the vineyard with this flower pot. It's not even touching, but nevertheless, yeah. Okay, so anyway, so the point is, Rav Shemaya is saying we see from that Mishnah it actually has to grow by an extra 1/200th in order to be usur, and yet you're telling me before that as soon as it takes root in the ground, then already it becomes usur. The answer is Amar Rava Trei Kroy Ksivi. The answer is Rava says you should realize there are two relevant psukim, or actually two words in the same pasuk regarding Kelaya Kerem that are relevant over here. Ksiv Hazera Uktiv Hamaleya. The pasuk first says hazera, means the plant, the thing you planted has become osir, but it also says hamaleya, which means what grows from it. Maleya means that becomes filled, means in other words the growths that grow from it. So therefore, so what is it? So what is osir? The original zera or only the maleya? Okay, so how do we understand that? Zarua me'ikrei b'hashrosha. If you have something that was originally planted, to begin with, you planted it in the vineyard, where it's osir, then as soon as it's zera, as soon as it's planted in the ground, then it becomes osir. Until it takes, as soon as it takes root in the ground. Until it actually takes root, in effect, it's not planted. It actually compares it to, it's just as if it was in a jar. But once it takes root, then already it can be considered planted, and therefore it becomes also. So then, Zeruah Me'ikre Bashrasha, then as soon as it takes root. Zeruah Ova, but your case involving the flower pot, it was already planted in a place which was mutter. You were allowed to plant it in the flower pot. Now you're just bringing the flower pot in. Hosif Ein, Loi Hosif Loi, then only if it grows by another 200th does it become Osir, but not otherwise. So that's how you reconcile it. Okay, so we're left with what Abaya says, that Kilaya Kerem, and also he says Vasa B'cholav, you get Malkus for using them even Shaloi Kederach HaNa'asai, unlike all the other Isurei HaNa'a Shabbat Torah, where you chayev only if you use them, you have the two Lashonis over there, that you're potter if you eat them, Shaloi Kederach HaNa'asai, or you're potter if you use them, Shaloi Kederach HaNa'asai. This whole question is relevant, by the way, as far as, for example, medicines. So for example, very commonly nowadays, you have some medicines that are in capsules. The capsules are made out of gelatin, and then the gelatin, 99% of the time, if not 100% of the time, is made from non-kosher sources. Typically gelatin is also. The truth is, by the way, there are some poskim who hold that a lot of the commercially processed gelatin nowadays would actually be mutter on various grounds, mainly because there comes a point in the processing of it where it's completely inedible. But most of the contemporary poskim hold that it's not so, that it is actually ulcer. So therefore you get into the question of, are you allowed to take such medicines? So one that we're going to learn on Omid Beis, actually we're going to start learning now about refuah involving Yisurei Hanah, that there are cases where it's mutter. So obviously, if it's pikuach nefesh, there's nothing to talk about. But even if it's not pikuach nefesh, if it's a chola she'ein by sakana, it's not necessarily, for example, swallowing a capsule is not necessarily derech hana'asa. You're not eating it. You're swallowing it without chewing it. That alone might be enough to be considered shaloika derech hana'asa. So therefore, many poskim will say that, yes, if you have, for example, obviously we're not even talking about a chola she'yesh by sakana, even if ein by sakana, even if the person is not dangerously sick, but just, you know, their whole body is feeling ill or whatever. So then they'd be allowed to take, for example, such capsules. If you have, let's say a person just has a minor headache or whatever, then it's something to ask a shayla. Some rabbonim will allow even then and some won't. Obviously, in all these cases, if you have a kosher alternative, then you do that. With the capsules, for example, a lot of times nowadays, instead they have the same medication, might be available as a pill, where there you don't have a problem. Contemporary means the current ones, means like the ones of this generation, of the previous generation. Yeah. Okay. No, that's contemporary means they live in our times, or close to our times, yeah. Okay. Fine. So now another discussion about this matter of using Yisurei Hanah, which eventually is going to tie back in to what we were discussing now about Kederach Hana'asan and Shloi Kederach Hana'asan. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Bakol Mitzrapin, you're allowed to use for medical purposes anything, even things that are also b'ana, chutz me'atzei asherah, except for the wood of an asherah. An asherah is also b'ana. You're not allowed to use. Now you have, now why shouldn't you be able to use the wood of an asherah? Tosfos, here you have a machlokas between Tosfos and the Ran on it. Tosfos holds, what we're talking about is, let's say, for example, you happen to have a doctor says, for example, that you need, let's say, a piece of cedar wood, a piece of bark from a tree, let's say, four. It so happens the nearest tree available is an asherah. Tosfos says that's not the issue. Then you could actually use it. What we're talking about is, let's say they're saying that the only one that's going to work is the bark from an actual asherah tree. Where then they're saying, in other words, that shedim or some other spiritual force or whatever is going to help you. Then if you use that bark or that piece of wood, in effect, you're agreeing that the asherah has certain powers. And that would be believing in avodah zarah, and you can't do that. But if it just so happens that the nearest tree that has bark or wood available happens to be an asherah, then Tosfos says that would be fine. On the other hand, the Ran disagrees, and the Ran says that any time, just the fact that it comes from an Asherah, it's called Abizrayu Avodah Zarah. Now, you have, there's the big three, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayis, and Shfichas Damim. Each one of them also has what's called Abizrayu, which is things that are not directly Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayis, and Shfichas Damim, but they're like outgrowths of it. And the Ran says this would be an example of Abizrayu Avodah Zarah. Just the fact that the bark or the wood comes from an Asherah tree is enough reason to aser it, even though it's not like the scenario where Tosfos is saying, where the doctors or whoever say Davka has to be from an Asherah tree. Okay. So the Gemara asks, hey, Chidum, what is the scenario where we're saying that you're not allowed to use wood from an Asherah tree? Are we talking about that the Sakonis Nefosh is involved? Then Afilo Atzei Asherah Nami. Why shouldn't you be able to use the wood from an Asherah? At this point, the Gemara doesn't yet know that the big three you're not allowed to use for Refuah. The Ijaleka Sakona, and if there's no Sakona involved, I feel a Koli Surin Shabbat Torah Nami Loi. You shouldn't be able to use any Isu in the Torah where there's no Sakona Snefashis. At least, again, according to the, at least not Derech HaNa'ose. Fine, we said before maybe Shaloika Derech HaNa'ose you'd be allowed to, but Derech HaNa'ose, why should you be allowed to if there's no Sakona? The answer is La'olam De'ika Sakona. We are actually talking about there is Sakona Snefashis. Va'afilo Hochi Ase Asherah Loi. Nevertheless, you still can't use wood from an Asherah. Again, according to Tosfos Dafka, when they're saying you must use from an Asherah, and according to the Ran, even if they're not saying that, but it just happens to be that this bark or whatever comes from an Asherah. Why? Titania, Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Bechlal, how do we know that there are Bechlal, how do we know that there are certain mitzvahs that you have to be moiser nefesh rather than being over on? So Rabbi Eliezer says, in Krishma, im nema b'chol nafshecha loma nema b'chol moidecha. The Pesuk says, we have to ask Hashem alakach b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol moidecha. B'chol nafshecha means with your life, b'chol moidecha means with your money. So once it says b'chol nafshecha, why does it have to say b'chol moidecha? V'im nema b'chol moidecha loma nema b'chol nafshecha. Just say whichever one of them is more precious to a person, and that's it. So the reason is, you may have some people where their goof is more important to them than their money. So such people, you have to say to them, you have to be even be willing to be most of your goof for the Eibishter. On the other hand, you may have the kind of person where his mammon is more precious to him than his goof. So therefore, for such a person, the Torah says, b'chol ma'idecha. By the way, we do have the famous expression. Now, usually, many of the Mefarshim say that that's, it's not a normal thing. A person should consider their mom and more chaviv than their guf. And how do you have that? I mean, you have a posik. That the Sultan says to the Eibishter about Eiv, that a person would give anything in order to save his own life. That the Rebbe brings it sometimes in Tanya, that therefore you have to give as much tzedakah as is necessary in order to save your ruchniyistic life. But anyway, so how do you have a person that mamone chavav ala migufay? So in fact, some of the Mefarshim say that it's not really a normal thing, which is why, in fact, there's an interesting idea that's brought on that. This is why in the second parasha of Krishma in Vahoyim Shemaya, it doesn't say b'chol moedecho, it only says b'chol levavchem, b'chol nafshchem. Among individual people, which the parasha of Shema be'ahafter is addressed to the individual, yeah, you can have some meshuganer that mamonah chavavol megufay. But when you come to the Jewish people collectively, you're not going to have like that. So in that case, then they ask, how does that fit with we know that tzaddikim mamonim chavavale megufam? It says about Yaakov Avinu that he went back for pachim k'tanim, and the Gemara uses the expression that mamonim chavavale megufam. So actually. Well, there is a ruch these sticker things. So there's a couple of interesting explanations on it. Ben Yehoyada on Or Gemara says it's not that the tzaddikim really consider their mammon more chaviv than their guf. Obviously, they know that their guf is more important. What it is they pretend that as if their mammon is more chaviv in order that if a satan or a makatrig or whatever is going to attack them, let him attack their mammon rather than them themselves. They're going to act as though their mammon is more important, and therefore he's going to say, oh, that's the most important thing to him, then let me attack that. That's the Ben Yoyada over here says something like that. There's a different explanation also that Al Pichzidus, that the idea is that Tzadik's Mammon, yeah, he can use it for Avodah Sabirurim, so therefore in that sense it's more precious to him. His Guf, he was already Mevarer. So therefore it's a done deal already. His Nechosim, he still needs to be Mevarer, therefore they're more precious to him in that sense. Whatever the case, but here in the Gemara we're not necessarily talking about a person on that level. But whatever the point is, that therefore the Torah says, b'chol nafshchol, b'chol ma'idecha, in order to cover all its bases. So the point is, we see from that, therefore, that, so Rashi says, if a person uses atzei asherah for a refuah, it looks as though he's agreeing that the asherah has power. And that would be going against v'hafta Hashem alakecha. So again, according to Tosfos Dafka, because they're telling him, you must use the Asherah, that's what's going to make you better. And according to the Ran, not even that, just the fact that you're using something from an Asherah, which is therefore Abizrayu Avodah Zarah. Okay. So therefore, so we see that Avodah Zarah you can't use even for Refuah. And by the way, the Rambam points out an interesting thing in this connection. We're going to, you know, if a person is nenas, if a person was forced to be over on one of the big three, then okay, it was wrong for him to do it. He should have been moser nefesh. But after all, you can't be mechayev him, miser or malchus or whatever for it because it was onus. On the other hand, the Rambam writes, if a person uses one of these things for refuah, then you could actually give him malchus for it because he had the choice, take the refuah or don't take the refuah. And he chose to, and therefore, for that, he can be punishable. Okay. He also Ravin Amar Rav Yechanan. When Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in the name of Rav Yechanan, it's not just Avodah Zarah, but Kol Misrapin, you can use any Isser Hanah for healing, Chutz Avodah Zarah, V'Gilei Arayas, or Shvichus Damim, except for the big three. Now, what would be an example of Shvichus Damim? Rashi says, for example, a person can save his life by killing somebody else. They tell him, you kill Pliny, and if not, you're going to be killed, as the Gemara is going to give an example soon. So that would be an example of a person saving his life using Shvichus Damim, and we're saying you can't do that. So Avodah Zarah Hodamara, and Avodah Zarah we know you can't, because we just said from V'ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol moedecha, that whether nafshecha or moedecha is more precious to you, either way you have to give it up and not deny the Eved. Gilui Arayis and Shvichus Damim. How do we know the same rule applies to Gilui Arayis and Shvichus Damim? So the Tanya, we learn in a place, the Rebbe Omer, the Pasuk says regarding a Naira HaMorosa. The Pasuk describes that if a Naira HaMorosa was raped, and the Pasuk says that she's screaming out, Be'ein Moshi Allah, nobody's saving her, then she's not chai of anything. The guy who did it is chai of Misa, she's not chai of anything. Because it was oinus, and the Pasuk uses the expression ki kashe yokum ish al re'ehu uretzachay nafesh, just like when a person stands against somebody else and kills him, kein hadavar azeh, so it is by this thing over here. So the question is, what exactly is that adding? What is that comparison adding? We already know you don't do anything to her because it says v'lanar alay sasa dover earlier in that same pasuk. So what is the comparison with retzeach doing? V'chima inin retzeach etzel naira amayrasa. So Hareza Bola Lamed Vinimta Lamed. So it makes it sound, if you read the Pasuk on a pshat level, it sounds like there's something about Naira Morosa that you don't know and you have to learn from Retzeach Teh. Really, it's the other way around. Really, what you're doing is Retzeach is being brought in over here in order to learn something from Naira Morosa to Retzeach. In other words, they're on the same level. A key kasher yokomish, Rashi says, that means, in other words, it's comparing them on an equal level. Retzeach and Naira Morosa. What's the comparison? Makish Retzeach and Naira Morosa. We're making a hekish between them. Ma Naira Morosa nitim la'tzila b'nafshoi. Just like a Naira Morosa, if you're able to save her, but if somebody else sees that this is about to happen, and then he's allowed to save her at the cost of the life of the roidif, and we know that because the pasuk finishes off the Ein Moshi Allah, that she's screaming and nobody saved her, implying that if there was somebody able to save her, then he has to do it no matter what. The actual halacha is, by the way, if he's able to save her just by wounding the guy, then he's obligated to do that. If the only way to do it, let's say he's too far away and he can't do an accurate shot, and therefore he has to shoot the guy in the head, then that's what he does. But we see that you're allowed to, and in fact you have to, save her in any way. This is the general rule of roidif, that if you see that, this is what we're saying, the same thing applies to retzeach. If you see a roidif is chasing after somebody to kill him, or after a woman who's an erva on him to do arayas with her, or after a zohar, same thing, then you have to kill him, yeah. So just like a Naira Morosa, after Retzeach, Nitin Latzila B'Nafshoi, therefore also Retzeach, you can also save him, even if it takes killing the Retzeach to do that. And in turn, V'Naira Morosa Meretzeach, then in turn, we're learning something about Naira Morosa from Retzeach, Ma Retzeach Yehorek Val Yaber, just like to kill a person is one of those things, Yehorek Val Yaber, a person has to be willing to allow himself to be killed rather than kill somebody else. The same thing, Naira Marosa should be prepared to let herself be killed rather than to submit. Now, Tosfos, though, has a different girsa. Tosfos does not have the girsa over here, Tehorig Val Taber, but rather Yehorig Val Yaber. In other words, that it's the boil. Because the Gemara elsewhere talks about, the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about, and in Ksubas talks about the concept that women are karka oilam. The woman is passive when it comes to an act of bia. The woman is passive. So therefore, well, she can be. Actually, there is an interesting machlokas rishonim on exactly what this means. One explanation is that the man, it's always an active thing, ain't kishri el ladas, whereas the woman, it can be passive. Another point is also, another way of looking at it, I think the Ramban says that precisely because it's passive, she can be forced into it whether she wants to or not. Whereas the man, there's no real way to force him if he doesn't want to, again, because then Kishri Eladas. Anyway, Tosfos learns over here that no, it's not Tehorek Valtaber. She's not obligated to be Moser Nefesh to avoid submitting, because by her, it's a passive thing. Only for the boil are we saying Yehorek Valyaber. If the only way for him to save his life is to be boil on erba, then he has to go on Mesiras Nefesh not to do that. And Tosfos actually goes on to say that, for example, also when it comes to Ritzicha, Tosfos says, only if they're telling him, kill somebody via Dayim, do you have to be Yehorek Valyaber. But let's say, for example, they tell him that we're going to take you and pick you up and throw you on top of this person, and it's going to kill him that way. Are you obligated to be Moisa Nefesh to avoid that? Tosfos says, no. Same idea. You're doing it passively. You're not doing an active thing via Dayim. Paying the father money is something else. That's if she's not a Moirosa. That's if she's an unmarried girl. This is talking about Nara Moirosa over here. Nara Moirosa is an Isumissa. If she's not married, then there's Knas and he has to marry her, etc. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's what we're learning. Is Ritzeach is Yehorek Valyaber. Nara Moirosa is also Yehorek Valyaber, or according to the gears that we have in front of us, Tehorek Valtaber. So in turn, by shvichus damim, where do we know that you can't be shvichus damim in order to save your life? So it must be svarahu. That comes from a svara. And we know that, for example, we have a case of a person who came in front of Rava. Amale, he says to him, I have a shayla, Mori Duroi, the mayor of my city. Duroi means my village, and Mori means the master. So the master of my village, the mayor of my village. Amale, he tells me, Zil Kafle Laplanya, go kill Ploini, who's a yid, the Eloi Katlinalach, and if not, then I'm going to kill you. What should I do? Amalei, so Rava tells him, Liktalucha v'leitikto, better they should kill you rather than that you should kill somebody else. Because the famous expression, my choses, the dama didach sumak tvei, who says your blood is redder, that your blood is more precious to the Eivishter, dama dama dahu gabra sumak tvei, maybe that other guy's blood is more precious. In other words, Rashi teaches out what Rava is saying, though you know that in general, pikuach nefesh doicha kola tora kola, so you're thinking it should be the same thing over here, but you know what? Pikuach nefesh doicha kola tora kola, because you're going to save a life. But after all, a life is going to be lost over here no matter what. It's either your life or the other guy. So either way, a life is going to be lost. So the alternative is you're going to do the Avera, and a life is going to be lost, the other guy, or you're not going to do Avera, and a life is going to be lost. So better, therefore, in that case, don't do the Avera. The whole heter to do the Avera is only where a life can be saved, and here, no matter what, a life is not going to be saved, a life is going to be lost, and who says that your life is more fresh, is the one that's more precious to the Eivishter? And you have this in a few places in Chas. Every place in Chas where it talks about this concept, then it talks about this concept of what you have to be Moser Nefesh for, then yeah, it mentions this. There's a Chassidish Avot on this, actually. I think from Simcha Bunim of Pshischa. He says, you see from this Gemara how much a person is required Api Torah to be onov, that no matter how great, he might be the greatest tzaddik and the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world, and the other guy is this Hamoinam, and yet he has to say to himself, who says that my blood is any more important than his? I think Reb Simcha Bunim of Pshischa says that. There is, by the way, I mean, obviously there is a huge amount of discussion about all the pros and cons, about all the many details in this. In connection with that, we just said that, again, that Tosfos is saying that Yehorek Valyaver applies only to the man, not to the woman. There is an interesting, now we know obviously that doesn't mean that she can do it Berotzen, and in fact, you know, we have the famous thing with Esther, for example, where she says, when I'm going to Achashverosh, Ani Kasher Avadti Avadti, because I'm going to be lost to you, what was, Bechlal, I mean, how is she doing such a thing? She's going and voluntarily submitting to Achashverosh, based on what Tosfos is saying, there might not be a problem. In fact, the Gemara mentions in those places, the Gemara mentions Esther Kauka Olam Avoy, that she was Kauka Olam, and therefore she's not obligated to be Moser Nefesh. Well, so actually, so the Shavus Yaakov actually has an interesting tshuva where there was one time a group of Jews who were being threatened to be killed by bandits, and one of their wives volunteered to go and the question was afterwards if she's also to her husband. The Shavus Yaakov actually said she's mutter because even though she did it voluntarily, she did it in order to save other people's lives, and he compares it to the case of Esther. On the other hand, the Noda Yehuda disagrees. He says, you know what, by Esther, it could have been Alpiru HaKodesh, it could have been, like you said, what the Zoya says, that there was a shed instead of her. It could be that they were to save the whole Jewish people. So Lav Dafke, he says that would be the Lav Dafke, he says it would be the same thing. But yeah. As far as Ritzicha also, so one example, unfortunately you had examples during the Holocaust where it's a choice between one Yid masuing another and then staying alive or not, and there were many shilas about that at that time. But also, for example, one case where you have nowadays, where sometimes you have a question of being Doicha Nefesh Mifnei Nefesh, is a case when you have Siamese twins. Sometimes you have where the situation is such where if they separate them and one of them dies and the other one will be able to live, but if they don't separate them, they're both going to die. There was such a case 30 odd years ago, and they asked Reb Moshe about it, and he said in that case it was mutter. You had actually one twin. I think the case over there was one twin had a full heart, and the other one had only a half a heart or something. And he passed. And in that case, we don't say my chazis the dama di doch sumak frey, because there we actually see one of them has the ability to live normally, and the other one doesn't, and therefore, yeah. So you're saying like this. So the other yid is going to be killed no matter what. But if you don't do it, then somebody else will do it. I'm not so sure about that actually. It could be. I mentioned it. I don't know. I didn't see anything about it this time. But I didn't look. I didn't look at every possible din about that. But yeah. Okay. So finishing off with this discussion, continuing with the discussion then about using Isurei Hanah for Refuah, Mar Bar Rav Ashi Ashkechei L'Ravina. One time, Ma'abar of Ashi found Ravina, the Shayefla Librate, that he was rubbing his daughter's skin, Biguharki de Orla, with unripe olives of Orla, because he needed for Refuah. Now that's Isurei Hanah, because Orla is also Banah. Amalei, so he says to him, Emu de Amar Abonim Mashasa Sakana. Sure, the Chachamim said you're allowed to use Isurei Hanah when there's a Sakana, like we said before, everything except for Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shefichas Damim. Who says when it's not a shasa sakana? This is Bepashtus, not a shasa sakana right now. Amalei, so actually Ravina says it is. Hai ish satsmirta nami, this high fever that she has. Ishta means fire, smirta means very hot. So this very high fever that she has, nami kashasa sakana dami, is also considered like a shasa sakana. And in fact, in modern terms, for example, Rav Moshe writes in one of his trovas that if a person has a fever of 102, then it's considered sakanas nefashas, and your machal Shabbos for them. Maybe even 101 if they say they need to. But yes, so there is such a thing that a high fever all by itself, even without any other symptoms, is considered pikuach nefesh. Ikadamri, another version, is that omale, another version that Ravina tells him is midi derech hanah kavidna. After all, am I doing it in the normal way of hanah? The usual way of hanah from olives is that you wait until they're ripe. Well, that, but also, well, no, because they're also hanah. But here they're unripe. The usual way is you wait until they ripen and then you squeeze the oil out of them. And here it's not. Here I'm taking unripe olives and pressing them and rubbing them on her skin. That's in order to bring down her fever. That's not considered derech hanah also. So in fact, both of them apply. If it's Shasa Sakana, then you're allowed even Derech Hanah. So if it's Shaloi B'Shasa Sakana, then you're allowed Shaloi K'Derech Hanah. Then you might still be allowed Shaloi K'Derech Hanah. But again, that gets into the question of, for example, medications like capsules or whatever. If a person is Shaloi B'Shasa Sakana, then fine. But if it's just Michush Ba'al, if it's just what Halacha calls Michush Ba'al, like the person just feeling a little uncomfortable, then it's not so simple whether you're allowed to. Okay. So now another discussion. Now we're going to start another discussion about Hanah from Isurei Hanah. Itmar. Hanah habala la'odam bar korchai. If a person has a Hanah, but it's coming to him bar korchai, against his will. As, for example, let's say he's hearing or smelling or something that is osur. So, Abaya omar muteres v'rova omar asura. Abaya says it's mutter, meaning that you don't have to stay away from it. Rava Abba Asura, Rava says as much as possible, you have to try to go away from it. So the Gemara says, Efshir v'komachaben. Now, if it's possible to stay away, and he's having kavana to enjoy it, so let's say, for example, he's smelling a smell of from avodah zara, let's say, and he's actually enjoying it, he's having hanah from it, and he could easily get away. Or loy efshir v'komachaben. Or even if he can't easily get away, but he's having kavana to come closer. Let's say he's coming closer dafka in order to enjoy it. Kula amalek pligi to oser. Then everybody would agree it's oser. Fine. If you might even have no choice, but you don't have to come closer. Al derech, like they tell a story with some Kantonistin that before they were shipped off, they asked a rav, what should we do? We're going to be in the army. They may force us to eat today for food. He says to them, you know, listen, you know, pikuach nefesh, derech kol haterek kol, like we just said before, but at least don't suck on the bones to get the marrow out. So yeah, you have to be smelling the smell, but at least don't be getting close to in order to enjoy it. So then everybody agrees it's also. On the other hand, loy efshir v'loy mechaven. On the other hand, if it's impossible to stay away from it, and you're not having kavana, you're not trying to come any closer, kolam olay pligi de shari, then both Abaya and Rava agree it's mutter because there's no choice. Ki pligi de efshir v'loy mechaven. The machlokes is rather, if it's efshir, it's possible for him to stay away, but he's not actually having kavana. He's not getting any closer, but on the other hand, he would be able to go away and not smell it at all if he wanted to. And continues the Gemara, V'aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. Now, with it now, we've had the machlokes in Shabbos and in other places about davar she'eino miskaven, about if you're doing something which you're not having kavana to do something that's also, but something that also ends up getting done. The classic example was dragging a bench on the ground on Shabbos. You might dig up the dirt and then you know, might not. And Rabbi Yehuda had said, we always said Rabbi Yehuda says it's also, and Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. So va'alibet Rabbi Yehuda da'amad davar she'eino miskaven also, within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that davar she'eino miskaven is also kula amal etligid also, then neither Abaya nor Rava would hold that it's mutter. They would have to agree that Rabbi Yehuda would say it's also, because even though it's loy miskaven, fine, but it's efshir, you are able to go away, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda would require you to go away, just like he would require you not to drag the bench on Shabbos. No, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying. Ki pligi alibadid of Shimon. The machloikas then would be, so far, this is all the first lashon of the Gemara. There's going to be a second lashon soon. According to this first lashon, only in one of the four cases is the machloikas, because again, in the two cases where kamechaven, then definitely it's osur. He has no business getting any closer in order to have hatnah from it. The question is if loy kamechaven, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say that on the other hand, if loy efshir v'loy kamechaven, it's impossible to get away, and you're not having kavana, you're not getting any closer, then there's no question it's mutter. What are you supposed to do? It's an oinus. So the question is efshir v'loy kamechaven. So within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Rabbi Yehuda would say that kind is also as well, because it is efshir to stay away. He pligi al libedid of Shimon da'amad davar she'eino miskaven mutter. The machlokes would be within what Rabbi Shimon says. That Rabbi Shimon says, for example, in Hilchos Shabbos, that davar she'eino miskaven is mutter. Therefore, Abaya could have Shimon. Abaya is saying straight out like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon allows davar she'eino miskaven. Therefore, here it would be fine. But Rava Amar, whereas Rava would say not necessarily. You have Shimon might say differently over here. Ad kan like Omer Reb Shimon alahecha deloy efshir. Reb Shimon might be talking about where it's not efshir to do otherwise. And Tosfos, by the way, points out efshir doesn't have to mean that it's impossible to do otherwise. For example, you don't have to drag the bench. Efshir, loy efshir, and loy efshir can also mean that it's not possible. Kedarka, it would take a much greater tircha, for example, to do it some other way. So, for example, over here, now, first of all, Tosfos points out that it has to be that it's not psik resha, because after all, we know we've learned before, Reb Shimon holds psik resha as also. So it's not psik resha, but what it is on the other hand, it's loy efshir means that you could do it differently, but it would take torach gadol, it would take a great tircha to do that. I think there are actually Rishonim who say that even if it's psik resha, the fact is you're not intending to have hana, therefore that can't be considered hana. I think the Ram says that. Anyway. So Rava would say, Ad kan like Amr of Shimon Alahecha de Loy Efsher. You know when Rav Shimon is talking about that's mutter. If it's Loy Efsher, if it's very inconvenient to do it some other way, Aval Hecha de Efsher, but where it's equally convenient to do it one way or the other, Loy, then not necessarily would Rav Shimon say it's mutter. So over here, it's equally convenient to go away or to stay there. So therefore, that's Efsher. So therefore, said Rav Shimon, so Rava says, even Rav Shimon might require you to go away rather than smelling the smell of a Vodazara. That's version number one. Version number two, Ikadamri, Efshev v'loy mechaven hainu plugtaya de Rabbi Yehuda v'Rav Shimon. Actually, no. If it's Efshev v'komechaven, then Efshev v'loy mechaven, it's possible for him to move away, but he's not having kavana. That's taka where Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon would disagree. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's also because Dov Hashem Miskaven is also, and Rav Shimon would allow it. Not like in the first version where we said that Rava would say that Rav Shimon would agree with Rabbi Yehuda in that case. So in the second version, we're saying even then Rav Shimon would allow it, because after all, it is loy kamachaven. Ki pligi the loy efshev kamachaven. Rather, the machlokes. Sorry, I skipped the line. Loy efshev loy kamachaven. If it's impossible to stay away and you're not having kavana to come any closer, kula amal pligi the shari. Again, everybody would agree it's mutter because there's no choice. Ki pligi the loy efshev kamachaven. According to the second version, the machlokes is where loy efshev. It's impossible to stay away, but the kamachaven. But he is having kavana. He is, for example, trying to come closer or to davka breathe deep in order to smell it. So then it's the other way around. Valibidid of Shimon de Ozal Basa Kavana. So then, within Reb Shimon's opinion, where Reb Shimon considers Kavana to be the most important factor, Kola Amalek, Pligi de Osir, then everybody would agree it's Osir. So even though we've usually always said that Reb Shimon is the one who's Makel, but here it comes out of Chomera from what Reb Shimon is saying, because he holds Kavana as the main thing, therefore in this case it would come out, according to the second version, that according to him it would be Osir. Ki Pligi Alibidid of Yehuda. The machloek, this is according to Rabbi Yehuda, Gama loishna miskaven, veloishna chain miskaven, efsher also. He says whether miskaven or not, because it's efsher, because it's possible to do differently, therefore it's possible to go away, therefore it's also. So now, Abaya could Rabbi Yehuda. So now Abaya would be saying straight out like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it as long as you're not having kavana, therefore that's it, it's mutter. The Rava Omalach, whereas Rava would tell you, not necessarily. Ad kan lekamer Rabbi Yehuda, shein miskaven ki miskaven ela lachumra. You know what, Rabbi Yehuda, when he's saying that kavana doesn't make a difference, that might be where we're saying that there's no difference comes out lachumra. You're dragging the bench, whether you're planning to dig up the dirt or not. Either way, you might dig up the dirt, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it's also. Aval miskaven, shein miskaven lakula. But you want to say over here that we're going to result from that akula. That we're going to get from that akula, that he's going to say, because that there's no difference between miskaven and ein miskaven, and since one is mutter, then the other one is going to be mutter as well. Loi, not necessarily would Rabbi Yehuda say that. That would be the case where we just said, so in our case over here, it's loy efshev kamachaven. It's impossible to stay away, but he's having kavana. Once he's there anyway, I may as well enjoy the spell. And he's having kavana too. So Abaya is saying in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would allow him to. And Rava is saying, maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say, the fact is, if loy mechaven, then fine, you have no choice. If loy efsher and loy mechaven, therefore you have no choice. You can't stay away and you're not having kavana, therefore it's no choice and therefore you're mutter. But if mechaven, Rabbi Yehuda might say, here is where we say kavana would make the difference. When it comes to dragging the bench, he's going to say not, because they are saying whether it makes a difference or not results in a chumrah. Regardless whether you mean to drag up the dirt or not, either way, to dig up the dirt, either way, you can't drag up the bench. But not necessarily would he say over here, just because loy ka mechaven would be mutter, therefore mechaven would be osir, not necessarily. Okay, so that discussion will continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with various proofs, pro and con, and eventually we'll talk about who the halacha is like. Now, usually when we have a machlokas, Abaya and Rava, usually the halacha is like Rava, and that would be lechumra over here. Now, we have the famous thing that the halacha is like Abaya in six places, Ya'al Tagam, and there is Tosfos. There's a Tosfos in at least one place, I think in Kedushin, that brings from Bnei Narbona, who say that the Lamed of Ya'al Tagam is our case over here, Loy Efshev Kamachaben. So in that case, in our case over here, the halacha might be like Abaya. So we'll discuss that point further tomorrow, Bez Hashem. And it's in the middle of Kiddushin. You have a case over there involving Kiddushin Shalom Nimsir Al-Biyah in the second or third parak, and then it's one of the six machlokas, and it's the kuf of Yau Kagam, and the Gemara there paskins like a baya. Yeah, it's later on. It's on Nunbez, yeah. Okay, shkoyach, everyone.